Welcome back to another episode of Diagnosing a Killer. I'm Coel.
And I'm Kenna.
How's it going?
It's going okay. I feel a little lightheaded. I got an itch right before we sat down to clean the toilet, so I did that. And then I was like, the sink's dirty. And so I used another chemical to clean that. Then I was like, the bathroom tile and the shower is dirty. And so I used another chemical to clean that. Before we knew it, mustard gas.
Mustard gas.
Not really, but I'm good.
Yeah, it's on the other end of the house, and I can smell it in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute.
It's great.
Awesome. Well, let's hope we don't pass out.
My nostrils are burning. Cute. Let's see if we can get through this.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think I have anything right before you get started, unless you do.
I don't. No, not at all. I had a decent salad for lunch today. That's about it. This just in.
This just in. You guys are also going to be hearing this a day late just because we had some plans come up and it was someone very special's birthday and we decided not to take away from that to record. So we're going to have this come out on Friday instead of Thursday.
Would you like to give everyone our handles?
Absolutely. You can find us anywhere on social media at Diagnosing a Killer, with the exception of X, formerly known as Twitter, which is at Killer Diagnosis. We have a PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, all at Diagnosing a Killer if you want to support us monetarily. Send us an email if you have a request or just anything that you want to say to us. We are diagnosingakiller@gmail.com. And last but not least, we do have a Patreon, which has three tiers. All three tiers will receive ad-free episodes every week, and tiers 2 and 3 will receive an additional bonus episode at the end of each month. And yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, good job.
Thanks.
That sounded really profesh.
Thanks. I'm excited to hear your case because all you've been talking about is how crazy it is.
Oh my gosh. So Kenna knows this, but she doesn't know who it is. But I was telling her that I was reiterating a trial that I watched to my boyfriend, Cleef. And it was so twisty, so turny that he's like, why don't you just do that for the podcast? You seem like you know it by heart. And I was like, okay.
Okay, that's a good point.
Today we're going to be talking about Joel Michael Guy Jr.
Do you know who this is? I don't know. Wait a second. Never mind. It's not who I'm thinking.
Not at all. Content warning. This episode contains discussions of self-isolation, distress between family members, brutal murder, and abuse of a corpse. If this episode is not for you, we encourage you to check out another one of our episodes. Remember that your mental health comes first, and we love you.
Love you.
Bye. So Joel Michael Guy Jr. was born March 13th, 1988, to parents Joel Michael Guy Sr. and his wife Lisa Guy.
Okay.
Joel Michael was the only child shared between the two, and Lisa loved having a child of her own. Joel Guy Sr., nicknamed Mike, had previously been married and had three daughters of his own, Chandice and then Michelle and Angela, who were twins.
Chandice?
It might be Candace, but it's spelt with a CH, so it might be Chandice.
Maybe it's Chandice, like jaundice.
She's a nice lady, leave her alone. Lisa doted on Joel Michael. She was almost obsessed over every little thing that he did or accomplished. She collected swimming trophies or various awards and hung them all around the house for everyone to see. Family portraits adorned every wall, showing this picturesque type blended family. And by the time that Joel Michael was in high school, the girls, the daughters, had moved around a bit and they began starting their own young adult lives. The girls did have their biological mother in their lives, but Lisa was nothing short of an amazing mother to the three girls. Mike and Lisa's home was described as fun and full of life. The girl's biological mother had struggled as a single parent to provide for the three, often having to having dinner with no meat, as meat was considered a luxury. It was just too expensive. The girls would eat things like pasta or canned goods for dinner, as that's all that was available. Mike and Lisa's house, however, was very different. The girls would stay with Mike and Lisa all throughout the summers and most holidays. They were always excited to visit as the kitchen table, the fridge, and the cabinets were always fully stocked with food.
I mean, as a kid, you don't really know better. You know, it's not like I'm hurting anyone's feelings by wanting more food, you know, but as an adult, it's got to be hard to be like, well, shit, like, I feel really bad. I can't give them what they have elsewhere.
Yeah, of course. And by all accounts, it seems like it's not like they had any animosity towards their biological mother. It was just that they kind of liked Mike and Lisa's a little more. And I can understand why, because you're a kid.
Exactly. Right? You don't see it as, it's not the person, it's the amenities that you have when you're
there. Exactly, yeah. So, of course, meat, fresh fruits and vegetable, and sugary and salty snacks were always available at Mike and Lisa's. The whole family would hop on the family boat and would often take fishing trips in the summer.
And they got a boat.
They got a boat, too. Like, Mike and Lisa were, they were doing well for themselves. The amount of love that Mike and Lisa shared was always apparent to the kids. They were often kissing, touching, and holding hands. And the girls were shown true love through Mike and Lisa's connection to one another.
Aww, sweet.
There is one person within that home that did not seem to be connecting with anyone, however, and that was Joel Michael Jr.
Well, I guess the name of the episode.
Joel Michael Guy Jr., yes. When the girls would visit for the holidays, Joel Michael would always be in his room, often going a full day without even greeting his sisters.
What the hell? And yeah. What was the age difference in them again?
I'm not entirely sure. I couldn't find it.
Do you know if they were older or younger, or you don't know at all?
The three girls were much older, I think. Oh, okay. I don't want to say much older. I feel like the twin girls, because those were the, there was Chandice and then Michelle and Angie. And Michelle and Angie were the twins. They were the youngest of those three.
Okay.
And they, I want to say maybe 10, 12 years.
Okay.
So it's significant. Like, by the time the girls were in high school, he was still a baby.
Yeah, you know? So he probably doesn't have anything in common with them, and he's like, fuck it, they don't care anyway. Like,
yeah, but that's still your younger sibling. Yeah. Like, even if it is 10 years, like, our mother and her sister are 9 years apart, and that was mom's baby. Like,
no, yeah, I'm saying in his mind, like, he probably is like, oh, what the fuck ever. Like, yeah. He's not going to go say hi, but they should have maybe taken it upon themselves.
Yeah, they're not going to say hi either. So, yes, it was customary for Joel Michael to do this almost every holiday season. He would just, like, sequester himself into either his own bedroom or a guest room or whatever.
That's not a good sign.
Yeah. So it was understood that's just how Joel Michael was. Joel would eventually graduate high school, and now that they were sure that Joel Michael would go off to college, Mike and Lisa decided to move closer to Mike's hometown of, this is such a silly name, and every time I hear it, I can't help but giggle a little bit. It's Sigoinsville, but Goin, it just sounds so silly.
It just reminds me of Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
Did she invent that town?
Sigourney Weaver, Tennessee.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry if you live in Sigourney Weaver, Tennessee.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaverville, Tennessee.
There you go.
So this is where Mike's sister and their family had lived growing up. And Mike's sister, in fact, still owned the property that their parents owned, as she inherited it when their father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
The couple would move to Knoxville, Tennessee, in a decently sized home, complete with kitchen, dining area, living room, and a few bedrooms, and even a workout room. Although it killed Lisa to be so far away from Joel Michael, she knew that he needed to be pushed out of the nest a little bit, and he was residing in Louisiana at this time.
Okay.
The couple certainly wanted enough room for the kids to come and visit if they so chose to. Joel Michael, now having to make something of himself, stated his intention to become a plastic surgeon, and announced that he would be moving to Washington, D.C. to attend George Washington University in the year 2006. And of course, his parents, especially Lisa, were in full support of this. As long as he was in school, Mike and Lisa agreed to help Joel Michael financially as long as his grades were high. After just one semester, however, Joel Michael would drop out of George Washington University and move back to Louisiana.
Well, honestly, I was going to say before you said that he had quit after a semester, I was going to say, no wonder he chose a long-ass fucking path of college, because his parents were like, we'll pay for it.
Exactly. You know, and oh my gosh, I've seen that before in my personal life. People are like, oh, as long as I'm in college, my parents will pay my way. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, great. You went to college for 12 years for a four-year degree.
Exactly.
Not naming names. Okay. Anyways.
We both, like, crossed our eyes at the same time.
So he continued to try to support his own dream of being a plastic surgeon by attending Louisiana State University. However, he would not obtain his degree, and he would drop out after just a few more semesters here.
So, like, quitting a bunch of things very early on.
Yeah.
Well, not, I mean, college, but, you know, before, like, no motivation, it seems like.
Yeah. And homeboy doesn't even leave his bedroom. So the fact that he's like, I'm going to be a plastic surgeon, I'm going to get lots of money. Like, that's just ridiculous.
You could virtually perform surgery or what?
Yeah, exactly. He's really good at video games. Yeah. So he'd probably be good at surgery.
He'd probably do Operation or something.
It's just him in his room playing the game Operation. Give me that degree. Mike and Lisa made good money at the time. Mike was a pipeline engineer designer, and Lisa worked for Jacobs in engineering and human resources.
Oh, wow.
For almost 10 years, the couple continued to support Joel Michael while he was living in Baton Rouge, and the couple remained in Tennessee. The family would still have holiday gatherings over and over again over the years, and Joel Michael would again sequester himself into a guest bedroom while the other family members enjoyed each other's company. This was the same every year until 1 year, 2016.
Dun, dun, dun.
It was announced a few months before the holidays that the couple had done it. They were finally going to retire, and even a little earlier than expected. And that would be come that December. Furthermore, the home that they settled in Knoxville was placed on the market. Mike had had a dream to one day buy his old family home back from his sister. After all, she wasn't using the property. She had already had a home of her own. Mike wanted to buy it, fix it up, and make it suitable for the couple to live out their days on a beautiful farm-like property. Just mere weeks away from retiring, the couple's home finally sold. The two planned on packing and moving their things to the old/new house throughout the holiday season. When invited for Thanksgiving by his mother, Joel Michael opted to sit this one out, saying that although he wouldn't attend Thanksgiving this year, he would like to attend Christmas.
I mean, he wouldn't attend either way. Even if he was there, he'd be in his room the whole time. Or that's in another room the whole
time. Yeah, exactly. This was told throughout the family, and no one thought anything of it at the time. Michelle, her boyfriend, and her three sons arrived at Mike and Lisa's house and was surprised to see Joel Michael's car in the driveway, as he said he was unable to attend. She glanced into the back seat of the car, and there she saw two Rubbermaid tubs with lids.
No, no.
Michelle thought to herself, quote, what a weird way to pack your things, end quote. But it was Joel Michael after all. He's already a weirdo.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I'm sure this isn't like a, oh, I can't make it. Surprise, I'm here.
Surprise.
You know, I tricked you.
Yeah. Earlier in the week, Michelle's washing machine had broken, and without a way to wash them and not being in a hurry since it was the holiday week, Michelle decided to round up the family's clothes and brought them to her parents' house in order to use the washer and dryer, which was located upstairs where most of the bedrooms and the workout station was.
Side note, if you hear a bunch of noise in the background, it's because there's planes that fly over our house, and for some reason, a billion people are flying into San Antonio right now.
So true.
Because we're not even kidding, it's been one every, like, 15 seconds.
Yeah, it's so, a lot.
And we can't keep pausing.
So. I don't know, I guess it's, like, because it's early evening, but also, like, what?
There's so many planes that are flying ahead.
Like, I get that the weather is getting nicer, but, like, yo.
Calm down.
Stop. Calm down.
Anyway.
Ugh. I thought that was another one.
I don't want to have to keep pausing. So I'm like, just go. It's fine.
As soon as she arrived and started bringing in her things, Michelle was instantly put off by the presence of Joel Michael. I mean, she knew that he was there, but he was actually downstairs communicating with people.
Huh.
Michelle felt very strange about Joel Michael interacting with her sons. She had even made the comment that she believed that Joel Michael didn't even know her children's names. Yeah, that's how far removed he was. Yeah.
So it's like, essentially like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, like, you obviously don't keep in touch with any of us.
Exactly. Joel Michael was almost peppy around her young sons, aged 7 or 8, 11 or 12, and 16 and 17. So she kind of had a teenage son and then two kind of adolescent boys. Joel Michael offered to take the boys upstairs and show them some cool stuff.
Look at all my weapons.
Look at all my samurai swords. Yeah. Look at how fast I can slice this bottle in half.
I used to use this little gun when I was a prostitute.
You ever used chopsticks before? I'm a pro at using chopsticks.
Chopsticks?
He's just a weeb. That's what it is. He's really into anime and he wears, like, kimono. Oh, there's another one.
Oh, there you go. He's like, hey, check out my nunchucks.
Check out my nunchucks. Check out this sweet fedora, m'lady.
M'lady.
So Michelle, at this point, was weary of the whole situation, and she would often go upstairs to check on her boys while also taking care of the laundry. One of these trips upstairs, Michelle was changing over some laundry when all of a sudden she felt someone standing directly behind her.
Absolutely not. And you already have a weird, like, feeling, and then that happens, I'd be like, get away, get away, get away.
Over her shoulder, she saw Joel Michael standing directly behind her, blocking the doorway to the laundry area.
Excuse me?
She said later that he was so close to her that he was practically touching her with his body. That's how close he was.
What the fuck did he want?
This was extremely unusual, as again, Joel Michael is barely seen from family members. Michelle excused herself to get around Joel Michael, and he did move from the doorway. A few moments later, Michelle checks on her boys yet again. Michelle could overhear Joel Michael telling the boys that they could have some of his childhood things.
Mm-mm.
Beanie Babies, video game consoles, accolades that he had had throughout his life, toys, games, and even clothing.
That doesn't sound good.
Michelle thought this was strange, even for Joel Michael. Mike was talking to his daughter outside in the family garage, known to be a hangout spot for the holidays, so this is the dad. Mike expressed his intention to cut off Joel Michael after the couple retires and moves by the end of the year.
Mm.
There's another one. Should I just keep pointing it out?
There's so many.
I'm going to be able to hear that in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll be able to hear it on my phone, but I'll definitely be able to hear that in the car.
Sorry, y'all.
Michelle encouraged her father that he should cut off his now 28-year-old son, move to the farm, and live untethered for once. As Thanksgiving Day wound down to a close, Michelle wanted to do something that she usually does every year for Thanksgiving, which is get a picture of her parents and her kids. The five positioned themselves outside the home on the steps of the porch to take the photo, but Joel Michael would insist on participating as well.
In the photo?
The infamous photo is out there, y'all, on the internet, if you want to see it.
So, I'm sure we're all thinking it. It kind of sounds like he's maybe getting ready to commit suicide, or if he's planning on doing something that he can't come back from, essentially.
Right. Yeah, especially with giving away his things.
Yeah, that's a very interesting detail.
Michelle would pack the kids in the car and pack their clothes in the car, and would head back home.
Leaving just the parents and Joel Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Friday passes, Saturday passes, and Sunday passes. Monday morning, November 27th, 2016, Jennifer Whited, which is Lisa's boss and friend, thought it unusual that Lisa did not show up to work that morning.
Mm-mm.
Of course, it was unlike Lisa to not show up to work without notifying anyone, but even more so that this was her last week of work before she retired.
Yeah, it's like, why wouldn't she show up?
Right. This was a well-known fact throughout the department as well. And even some of Lisa's coworkers had planned a special lunch, sending her, like, a send-off party for her. Mm. Immediately, Jennifer phoned Lisa. When she did not get a response from Lisa via text or phone call, Jennifer then decided to call Lisa's husband, Mike. Mike, too, did not answer for several phone calls. At 9:30 a.m., Jennifer phoned non-emergency.
Hi, yes. I have an employee that has not reported for work today and highly unlike her. I've tried calling her home number, I've tried calling cell phone, and can't get a hold of her. What can we do about that? Can somebody go by and check on them?
Yeah, do you know her address?
I do. It is...
What is your name, ma'am?
My name is Jennifer Whited.
And what company are you with?
Jacobs Engineering.
And what's the good call back for you guys?
It is.
Okay, what's the employee's name?
Lisa Guy. Her husband's name is Joel.
Should he be there too? Does he live with her?
Yes, he does. And they do have a dog named Jake. I think he's a big baby.
Okay.
Definitely isn't like her just not to show up.
All I can think about is Jake.
It's From State Farm?
No, the dog that she mentioned, and now I'm scared.
So, as you can tell in the emergency call, Jennifer calls Mike Joel, mm-hmm. because Mike is a family name for Joel Michael Sr.
Yes. So, I know. When I heard that, I was like, wait a second.
You're like, who's Joel? Yeah. Like, wait, she's married to her son?
Yeah.
That's weird. You ready?
Yes. Typical, you know, concerned friend.
Yeah.
Or concerned employee.
Officer Stephen Ballard was dispatched to the residence. He noticed right away that there were cars in the driveway, but seemingly the property was quiet. He knocked several times on the front door and rang the doorbell, but was met with no response. He walked around the house, and there he saw a small gate, a little taller than waist high. Out back, he noticed a doghouse and whistled and called for the dog, but again was met with silence. Noticing that the gate had a padlock attached to it, Officer Ballard could not legally enter the backyard without probable cause. Officer Ballard left the scene. He then proceeded to meet up with a detective nearby to the location of the welfare check. Officer Ballard and Detective Jeremy McCord discussed Officer Ballard's findings, or lack thereof, and the two were starting to realize that everything just seemed a little too eerie. This was further compounded when Jennifer, still not hearing from the guys, called yet again to insist that something was not right. The two officers headed back to the location once again. This time, when at the front door, officers peered through the windows, noticing bags of groceries sitting on the other side of the door. In it were perishables, like sausage, bacon, and ice cream. This was enough for detectives to realize that someone was clearly interrupted while doing the task of bringing in groceries and putting them away.
Yeah.
It's like, who comes home, drops off groceries, and then, like, leaves the house before putting them away.
Or takes a nap or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or just, like, hops in the shower. That doesn't happen. Furthermore, upon closer inspection, the doorknob on the front door seemed out of place. There were scratch marks all along the outside of the handle, and the door was, like, scratched up, like the wood. The handle didn't look like a typical front door handle either. It was, like, a twist handle instead of, like, a knocker one. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
Or, like, what would you call that?
Like a turn? I don't know. Like
one with a lever,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Officers round the back of the house, hop the gate, and approach the back door. They immediately noticed that the back door's door handle was missing.
What?
And in its place was a hole where a doorknob should be.
Shut up. So it was, like, put into the front door so that whoever had a key couldn't get in? Okay.
Oh my god. Okay. All right. Detective McCord knelt down to peer into the hole. When he did so, he felt heat instantly, coming from the hole.
Oh no.
Along with a smell that was a mixture of all different kinds of things.
Yeah, spoiled groceries and probably death.
All Detective McCord knew was that it wasn't a good smell.
Yeah.
Detective McCord was staring straight into the living room, and he could see the other side of the front door where I'm using my hands, like, you listeners can hear, like, see me, but I'm describing it to Kenna. So when you look through the hole of the back door, essentially the first kind of area you would be looking at would be kind of a living area. Then you can peer straight down a hallway, and then there's the front door, and so yeah. You can see the groceries from where he's looking.
Okay? Oh my god, I'm just, like, imagining, like, an eyeball popping out from the other side. Like, someone, like, leans over and looks right back at him.
Like Jeepers Creepers? Oh no. To the right of the living area was kind of the kitchen. Like, it's kind of an open-air kind of kitchen area. Detective McCord could see that there were black trash bags and gallons of chemicals sitting in that kind of threshold area.
Probable cause.
The back door was unfortunately deadbolted, so police could not enter through the back door. Backup is starting to arrive, and it is now being reported as an increasingly concerning circumstance. Officers are able to gain access through the garage after finding Lisa's car unlocked with a clicker in it. The officers proceeded with caution as they entered the home through the garage door leading into the kitchen area. Mm-hmm. When the officers entered, they began to call out, hoping that someone wasn't in need of medical attention. Officers can faintly hear a dog howling somewhere in the house.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, okay. Sigh of relief. Didn't have animal warning on there.
I know, but you never know.
The house was extremely hot. Not just that the AC was off, but that the heater was on.
That was obviously intentional to increase decomposition.
Again, furthering this, the oven was on high heat.
Ew.
The top of the stove sat a cooking pot, and the stove was on as well, contributing to the heat. To the left of the entryway sat a small kitchen table, like a gathering area. On top of this table were two wallets, a hammer, pliers, some cash, and a woman's purse. The wallets contained the IDs of Lisa and Mike Guy. Through the living room and into the computer area, it seemed unremarkable. These rooms were immediately cleared by police. Moving back through the kitchen, cops noticed what appeared to be the original front door knob. Attached was a realtor's lock, since the house had been for sale.
Oh, duh.
And the realtor had installed it to show off the home. Police moved into the dining room, where on the dining room table were long guns, rifles, and knives. The police are in the entryway now, and here police can confirm the perishable foods have also begun to rot. Is this possibly where the strange smell is coming from?
Well, if you think about it, you said Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so the groceries could have realistically been bought on Friday, and with the heat turned up that high, they obviously would have rotted or right. gone bad. So right. let's hope.
Police began to head upstairs, and the dog's howls are getting louder. It isn't long before they realize the magnitude of the scene that they've stumbled upon. As they ascend up the stairs, they first notice spots, streaks, and eventually a pool of blood at the top of the stairs.
Oh my God.
There, they see a pair of bloodied scissors lying in this pool.
Scissors?
As well as a pile of women's garments. A wedding ring lays near the clothing.
So it wasn't a robbery?
Certainly not. But more horrifying than that, Officer Ballard could see something at the end of the hall. Something that he was completely unprepared for. At the end of the hall, in the workout room, Officer Ballard saw a pair of severed hands cut off at the wrists, positioned on top of one another.
Okay.
It's fucked up. Police immediately turn their attention to each room, as they must be cleared for a potential perpetrator for whatever has occurred here. The master bedroom was almost completely undisturbed, other than an industrial bottle of food-grade hydrogen peroxide sitting on the dresser. The bottle was covered in blood. Used and unused latex gloves were haphazardly strewn about the dresser. Police open another bedroom to the left of the hallway, which appears mostly to have been used as a storage room that had been ransacked. On the right was the laundry room, one pile of clothes, as if someone had changed quickly. Down the hall, a bathroom. Here, police found blood all over the floor, flung on the walls. Used gauze, bandages, hydrogen peroxide, rubbing alcohol, used and unused gloves completely covering the sink. Another pile of clothes lay here. Police have now come to understand that the family beloved's dog, Jake, has been locked in an adjacent room, but they don't know for how long.
Oh, that poor guy was probably so scared.
Like, you can hear, like, as soon as they enter, because there's police body cam out there, as soon as they enter, you can hear him just, like, it's almost like he's screaming for help. It's so sad.
Oh my God, and he's, like, probably, he's starving. And so hot. And,
yes. Ugh. Especially being upstairs, it's way hotter because heat rises, right? Now police have one more room to clear. They make their way into the workout room. This room was by far the bloodiest they've seen so far. Workout equipment has been overturned, including a treadmill. And of course, the hands lying in the middle of the room. However, police had yet to find a single person. That is, until they check the master bedroom once more. Within the master bedroom sat two Rubbermaid tubs. In these tubs, police would find arms, legs, feet, and torsos.
Mm-mm.
The problem is that police had no idea of how many people they were looking at, as everything had begun to liquefy. This is not just from a normal decomposition process. Gallons and gallons of empty sodium hydroxide bottles were all around the tubs.
Oh my god.
Including industrial-grade drain cleaners and toilet uncloggers.
This is like fiction. It sounds like a movie.
It sounds like a movie. Now knowing the horrifying truth, police left the residence and waited for crime scene technicians. It was not until later that the forensics teams processing the scene would come across another gruesome find. Contained within the cooking pot placed on the stove was the head of Lisa Guy.
When you said it was on, I was like, I really hope that was just for heat.
It's fucked up.
It reminds me of the Zach Bowen case. Yeah.
Another find would present itself in the form of a backpack in the guest room containing a notebook. In this notebook was written, now bear with me, okay? Because this is, it's the ramblings of a madman. Get killing knives, quiet, multiple. Get carving knives to make small pieces. Get sledgehammer, crush bones. Bring blender and food grinder, grind meat. Get bleach, denature proteins. Get plastic bend for denaturization process. Does not matter where they're killed, just get rid of bloody spots to prevent evidence of time of death. Not a mattress or couches. Get rid of bodies inside house. There and my DNA already there.
Sorry.
This next part was crossed out. Open up doggy door to provide entryway. He crossed that out. He was like, oh, that's not good. Can't do that.
Too fat. I don't know what he looks straight like.
Straight up, though. Accurate. Flush chunks down toilet, not garbage disposal. He says fucking chunks, bro. That's fucked up.
That is so fucked up.
Get plastic sheeting for disposal process. Okay, this is another one that's crossed out. Get hollow point bullets just in case. But, oh, no, can't do that. Never you know mind. Why? You know why? Well, he'll tell you. We'll be seen buying bullets. Just use computer room. Gun, and then like a little arrow, check to make sure there are bullets. Parentheses, last resort. This guy thinks he's, like, doing something major.
Yeah, and he's, like, you don't write all their fucking thoughts on a piece of paper like that, dummy. Yeah.
No, this is where you can start seeing the arrogance of where he's at. It's like, so far he's completely self-isolated himself, won't, you know, interact with his family whatsoever, but now you're seeing, oh, this guy is a narcissist.
Plotting.
Yeah, exactly. Because he thinks he can get away with it, writing it goddamn down on a fucking notebook. He's not alive to claim her half of the insurance money. Arrow, all mine.
Ew.
$500,000. All mine.
What makes you think it's going to you? They have three other children.
Yeah, he sounds like a villain. Like, I mean, he is, but, you know, in this story. But not story. You know what I mean.
It's like an Instagram post of someone's, like, a plate of food, and it's like, all mine.
Exactly.
Ew.
It's like, all we're going to do is, like, sneak in the house. We're going to grab the cash. All mine.
Whoa.
Yeah, just, what?
Gross.
Flood the house. Okay. Turn heater up as high as it goes. Arrow. Speeds decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
Bleach reacts with luminol just like blood. Douse area with bleach. Big sprayer. Lie. Trash compactor? Body gives time of death. Arrow. Alibi. Don't have to get rid of the body if there's no forensic evidence on the body. All caps. His fingerprints and DNA. Minimize things I touched throughout visit. Wear gloves and socks to prevent fingerprints and footprints. Drop something down the garbage disposal to break it. Get him on the ground fixing it. Arrow. Kill him with the knife. Like, he thought, like, oh, I'll just break the garbage disposal. That way he's, like, under there fixing the garbage disposal. But, like, how removed is that?
No, for real. And he's, like, planning different ways. Like, oh, if this doesn't work, then I'll do this. If this doesn't work, then I'll do that.
He sounds like the Wile E. Coyote.
Also, dumbass, because he's, like, leave no trace. He left shit everywhere.
He left shit everywhere. Literally everywhere. I think they said after the forensics teams went in there, I think the main forensics lady, her name's Sandy something, and I loved listening to her, if you guys have a chance to watch the trial. I loved listening to her. But she was like, I don't think there's a single room that did not contain some type of evidence.
Exactly. And he's like, well, my DNA's all over the house anyway. That's great. And that might be, like, circumstantial. But the fact that you probably have skin cells inside the used gloves, like, yeah. Come on.
Oh,
and
no.
And you left them all there? Fucking dumbass.
He's a bumbling idiot. Clean up mess from him before she gets home. Okay, like, I'm just gonna kill this man with a knife, and I'm gonna clean it up before she gets home from the store.
Clean it up.
Kill her with knife. This part was crossed out. Kill dog after.
Okay.
But he crossed it out.
Well,
he's like,
I'm glad he crossed that out, but these poor people, like, what the fuck did they do?
Yeah. No, he's gonna kill the parents and just, like, kill the dog. Nah, that's too extreme. Leave alive and take dog with you.
Nah, that's too much.
That's too much. Place her in shower. Turn on hot water and point at her to get rid of forensics.
Point at her?
Yeah, so I'll read the rest of the notes and then we'll discuss. Remove her clothes and take them with me for disposal. Place him in plastic bin and use it to get him into the upstairs bathroom. So I guess he means put him in there and then drag him.
Ew.
Cut off his arm and plant his flesh under her fingernails. Okay. Which makes no sense.
Yeah, literally none.
Place her hand with his DNA so that his DNA is not washed away by shower. Use sodium hydroxide to destroy soft tissue and soften bones for transport. Based one every hour to accelerate.
Ew.
Flush sodium hydroxide down toilet. Wash out bin and handheld shower head with handheld shower head, and then direct handheld into toilet to flush everything out of pipes and into public waterway. Douse killing rooms. Kitchen with bleach. Place hair curler with flammable paper and flammable containers of gasoline in four locations. His killing room, her killing room, his bathroom, her bathroom. Wipe down areas near killing rooms and bathrooms. Turn heaters up to 90 degrees to melt fingerprints and dry everything.
That's not how that works.
It's not how that works. Set her phone to send me a text message late Sunday to prove that I was in Baton Rouge and she was alive. Leave through front door and wipe down doorknobs. Timer for flammable set for Friday at 10 a.m. so they can't report it. Included also on this notebook was ultraviolet light shows fingerprints. Check mail before leaving. To get rid of blood, use peroxide and bleach. I don't know how he could possibly frame either of his parents after he... Like, what is he... So that's why he was saving his dad's hands, right? We can say, okay. He saves his dad's hands so that he could frame them. But, like, are you going to mail in the hand after you plant the DNA? Like, what are you going to do?
How is that going to work?
Does that make any sense?
Also, wouldn't you just, like, set the house on fire and save yourself all this trouble of having to clean up all this evidence?
Well, that's kind of, I guess, what he's saying, like, set flammables for Friday. But it's like, when did, I'm very interested to know the process in what time frame this was him writing this. Because it seems like he's got a lot of revisions.
Yeah, and a lot of ideas.
Ideas flowing here.
Not for nothing, but, like, he thought of... set phone to send self-text on Friday or Sunday night. You didn't think to set a text to send to the boss that shows that they're not coming to work on Monday morning?
Yeah, right.
Like, common sense.
I love that he iced out the realtor, too. He was like, nah, this bitch ain't getting in my house. I'm gonna remove this doorknob.
Well, he didn't want anyone coming in, because with the realtor lock, you can get that from the realtor. You don't have to be with the realtor, and anybody can open it and get the key.
Yeah.
Could have been some strangers that just wanted to come see the house.
Yeah. So he just, like, completely removed the doorknob, and he's like, nope, I guess I live here now.
This is so bizarre.
It is bizarre.
What was the motive? Like, money?
Another page was solely dedicated to the chemical and biological compounds of the human body, including how much fat, water, protein, and other matter contained in the human body.
He should have just become a fucking chemist.
Well, yeah.
He's clearly interested in that
He's
shit.
He's clearly interested in that.
God.
He's done the research, ladies and gentlemen. On the last page, the notebook read, her assets, her life insurance, $500,000, possibly more, with double indemnity. With him missing / dead, I get the whole thing. God, he sounds
That's
like a
not
fucking,
true.
He sounds like, what's that, Whiplash, what is, Stanley Whiplash? Snidely Whiplash from what's that guy's name?
I have no idea what you're okay. talking about.
You know, the guy with, like, the mustache. He's going to push a girl on a train. See, you know, like that guy. Yeah.
No, but it's like, if the husband's missing and they think he might have had something to do with the murder, that's still not going to give anyone life insurance.
It's
no
not.
One's going to get it because it's going to be an open investigation, you
it's
dumbass.
True, yeah. He's
not think this through.
He's not bright.
Also, if it's a murder, you don't get life insurance.
Especially when you're the one doing the murdering.
Yeah.
All other assets are joint. Go to him if missing. Unknown if he's dead. His assets, including all joint property if missing. When he gets all joint property, also gets joint debt.
Boo, sad face.
Knoxville house, homeowner's insurance possibly, but possibly worthless after fire. Oh, $100,000. Sigoinsville house, appraised at $400,000 plus. Worthless with Mike's sister on property. Her house, and of course it said in her name, but
yeah,
the story's, yeah. Her car, his SUV, not paid for. His boat, his old truck, paid for. His 401k, $80,000, possibly left after taxes. He could possibly have savings and or other investment accounts. This guy's an idiot.
So he's like, okay, cool. Not going to actually do anything to make money, like go to, you know, medical school like I said I was going to do.
Become a plastic surgeon.
Kill my parents and I'll just inherit all this fucking money.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, the fact that he mentions that the Knoxville house may not be livable due to a fire and not due to the fact that two people brutally died in there is insane.
Yeah.
Like, no, oh, it doesn't matter if this is where I killed my parents.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a fire, it's just it might damage the house. It
well,
might
like,
not be livable.
What did he think was going to happen? Because the house sold.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being those people? You just close out on a house and, like, you're due to move in like 2 weeks and the
tragic.
Previous owners were murdered.
Mm-mm. I would drop my offer so fast.
You already fucking bought it. Bank's breathing down your neck now. You gotta pay off a murder house.
Yeah, that's fucking awful. I'm sure he had to do something. He had something to do with that financially. Like, he had to pay restitution or something.
I'm sure. And maybe that's what he's talking about. Maybe that's why he wanted to light it on fire, is because he knew it was going to sell.
Yeah.
Sorry. Or that it was sold. So, but then how does that...
He's clearly not thinking. Like, he's dumb. Like, he didn't think of any of this.
I'm hurting my brain thinking about all the things he didn't think about.
Yeah, exactly.
Among other incriminating evidence, police found a Walmart receipt containing a date of November 26th at 3:30 p.m., The receipt was for bandages, gauze, hydrogen peroxide, and this was among other first aid mm-hmm. items. Lisa's purse also contained a Walmart receipt from that same day, just 3 hours earlier, meaning that she and her husband died between noon and three that day.
He's like, oh, I forgot some stuff. Gotta go back.
Well, you'll see why. It is assumed that Mike was murdered while Lisa was at the store. And upon arriving, after dropping off her groceries by the front door, she proceeded upstairs, either by being called or maybe heard something. She was then attacked from behind while ascending the stairs, ultimately falling when reaching the top. During the attack, Joel Michael sustained stab wounds, like, to himself. Like, self, what is it, what do you call that?
Not self-inflicted, but it was, like, accidental from
his...
Because we've said it before on the podcast, it's, like, it's very easy... essentially to get a self-inflicted wound when you're the perpetrator, because unfortunately this kind of gross, but the knife gets like slippery with all the blood, and so it's very common that the perpetrator injures themselves by accident.
Yeah, absolutely. Police go to the Walmart to review camera footage, and at the self-checkout the camera revealed a man with a bandaged up hand making this purchase, all these bandages and
it's like
shit.
Dripping blood.
Yeah, he's like, oh, don't worry, my mind. Clearly, I need this stuff.
God.
Ugh. The man was identified as Joel Michael Guy Jr. But where was he? Sure enough, police could just, I don't know, look at the fucking notebook and be like, he's probably in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, the next page is like where I'm going after.
Yeah, my next exact steps. Address. Yeah. He had already paid off the rest of his year's lease and then some with his parents' card.
Ugh. Like, immediately uses the money, like, yeah. That he stole. Okay.
He'd been going around purchasing shit for the last few days. I'm pretty sure he even purchased the gauze and all that other stuff with his parents' card.
That's such a dick move.
During the autopsy, medical examiners couldn't determine exactly how many cuts were made to each body, given the deterioration.
Yeah.
Mike sustained at least 34 stab wounds, and Lisa sustained at least 25 stab wounds.
That is so fucking overkill. Like, for what? Like, for 12 hours of spending money? Like, yeah. There's no way that this guy genuinely thought he was going to get away with this.
I don't know.
And if he did, that's hilarious.
It just makes me feel like maybe he didn't have any real-world exposure to anything like this, because how do you not think of those things? Like, but that's how... I want to say, I don't even know what the term would be. That's just how ignorant he is, I guess. Like, the fact that he's so unlearned, you know?
Yeah.
That he just really thinks that he can just do a better crime than anyone else.
It didn't even dawn on him that his sisters might be able to testify and say, well, yeah, he was kind of weird growing up. He never spoke to us. Mm-hmm. He clearly didn't care for our family like we did, you know, or whatever, our parents.
Exactly. Ugh. Although they were dismembered similarly, it was ultimately the decapitation of Lisa and the brutality in which she was attacked that set them apart.
Mm.
Lisa was stabbed so hard that she suffered blunt force trauma in the process as well.
Oh my God.
Resulting in 9 ribs being perforated.
Holy shit.
So just, like, detached from, yeah. Joel Michael Guy Jr. was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of felony murder, and 2 counts of abuse of a corpse. Guy pled not guilty, but also tried to file a motion to be sentenced to death if he were found guilty.
Of course, because he doesn't want to take accountability for his actions. No. Like, I'm not guilty, but if you find me guilty, if you guys think I'm guilty, just kill me.
Just kill me. I'm not going to live out the rest of my days in prison.
That's the narcissism.
Yeah. In a somewhat strange trial that lasted just 4 days, the defense presented no exculpatory evidence that would exonerate Guy or even explain a reason behind his atrocious acts.
They're like, sorry, dude, you're on your own here.
We're like, I mean, I don't know what to say, Your Honor. My client did it.
Yeah, like, I literally can't tell you.
We're more of just like a moral support for Mr. Guy.
Yeah. We're here because we have to be.
So, yes, the prosecution did its thing. And on the 4th day, Guy was found guilty on all 6 charges. It was said that the sentence would be the maximum allowed by law, but before the judge would sentence Guy, the victims, the family of Mike and Lisa, chose to participate in victim impact statements.
Mm.
Quote, my name is Alvin Madere Jr. I'm the oldest brother of Lisa Guy and brother-in-law of Joe Guy. It's with a heavy heart and determined spirit that I make a statement to the members of this court. I am many things. I'm a father, I am a grandfather, I'm a husband, I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, and I am a son. I have been blessed to see many wonderful things on this earth. I've watched my stepson grow to become a man. I've been there for my grandchildren, and I've watched them grow and to become little people. Your parents cannot see these things, Joel Michael, because of the crime that you've committed. My sister, Lisa Guy, was one of the most loving, caring, and forgiving people on the face of this earth. Her husband, my brother-in-law, Joel Guy Sr., was honestly one of the most down-to-earth, hardworking, and kind people I've ever met. They were the type of people who would help anyone wherever they could. My sister was the type of person who loved deeply. She loved the family. She loved her mother. She loved her father, her sister, and I, her husband. She loved her children and her stepchildren. She loved her grandchildren. Her love was taken. It was taken from this world by murder. My sister and brother-in-law loved family. They enjoyed holidays. Some of my favorite memories I have of her and him were from the holidays. We could sit around and tell fun and interesting stories. And my brother-in-law was an amazing storyteller. And our family holidays will never be the same without them there. Lisa and Joel were murdered. They were butchered. Their bodies were desecrated. Their spirits were forever harmed. The loss of my family members will be forever eternal. I stand for them and their statement. Days after hearing of Joel and Lisa's murder, my mother was hospitalized, and she never exited that hospital. The loss of a child was a difficult one for her, one that I hope that I never have to endure. But to find out that your daughter was murdered by your own grandchild was heartbreaking. She could not even attend the funeral. She was unable to say her final prayers. She was a Catholic, and she was unable to take communion at her own daughter's funeral. The next day, after we buried Joel and Lisa, my mother died. They fought to bring her back, but she truly died of a broken heart. There are three deaths on Joel Michael Guy Jr.'s hands. My grandchildren lost their grandmother, my stepson lost his grandmother, and I lost my mother on that day. I lost my family. My mother is gone, my sister is gone. The world has forever changed. The impact of this crime is notorious. My grandchildren's grandchildren will be able to read about this horrible, disgusting crime, and we will never be the same. Thank you. End quote.
Literal full body heaves.
Straight up. Like, I got anxiety reading it.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just, it's an all-encompassing statement.
It really
and
is.
His, Mike's sisters speak, and of course the daughters speak. And, but that was really intense.
You know, and I was thinking during listening to that, we do so many of these cases. You know, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm not going to speak for both of us. But sometimes I get a little numb to the fact that people, like, lost their entire lives, you know, when we talk about it. And even during this case, like, it's easy to, like, forget how impactful just one person's life is on other people, let alone two or the hundreds of victims that we've covered
right.
as long as we've done the podcast. Like, hearing things like that just brings it back down to earth, like, oh my God. Like, and it makes me think of my family, you know, when we lost someone very close to us, that happened. When we lose someone very close to us in the future, that's going to happen. And I can't imagine it being as heinous as this and then having to deal with all that aftermath. The aftermath in itself is awful.
Yeah.
You know, imagine it being caused by another member of your family.
Of your family, like, right? Yeah. And someone that, like, you're supposed to trust family, right? And it's just, they did everything for him.
Yeah.
The fact that not just Lisa, but Mike too, but the fact that she was so proud to have that baby. She was so proud to have him because they had already had the girls, but Lisa wanted a biological child.
Yeah.
And for your only biological child to do that to you.
It's horrendous.
And with as much support as she tried to give him too. And the fact that he attacked her so brutally. You know, Mike Sr. fucking fought. There was evidence of that in that workout room. He fought. And I want to say that the reason that Joel Michael was, Jr., was as bloodied as he was because of his father. I think his father tried to kick his ass.
Good.
I think he did.
God,
but
awful.
Lisa, you know, literally being ambushed and then so brutally attacked. And then to not just, like, let them be and further this ridiculous plan that you have that you're gonna, you know, dissolve bodies and, like, flush them down a toilet.
Yeah,
it's horrendous. Like, I don't know.
It's disgusting to even think about. Like, yeah, you're so right. He could have just committed this awful crime, which, I mean, obviously if we had it different, he wouldn't have ever done it. But he could have just said, okay, you know, that's it, I'm done, and then leave. But no, he has to manipulate the crime scene, turn the heat way up. It's like, you're not fucking Dexter, all right? Like,
that's what he thinks. He thinks he's this mastermind.
He clearly didn't think much through, and he spent so much time in his room by himself. He probably got a lot of his ideas from fictional TV shows and movies.
That's true.
And didn't really do his research on, like, I mean, he left shit everywhere, like we said. Like, he's like, oh, get rid of evidence, bleach, and then he leaves fucking 8 pairs of gloves that he wore there.
Oh, there was, like, I mean? no joke. There's probably at least, like, 50 pairs of gloves.
Why did you change gloves so much? I don't understand.
I don't know.
I don't understand.
I think maybe he was trying to, I think, in my mind, maybe he was, so the hydrogen peroxide bottle had blood all over it, one of them. He had many. But I think that it had blood on it. I think he poured that on his hands. And I think when he bandaged it, I think he was going to put gloves on over it, but he probably kept bleeding. Oh, you know what I'm saying?
See. But then he left all of his DNA in the blood. That's so funny.
Yeah, he's an idiot.
It's a horrible crime. Horrible crime.
Joel Michael Guy Jr. was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. He has never been evaluated psychologically, yielding no explanation as to why he committed such an incredible act of callousness. In my opinion, and it's a humble one, it's just as these people are reading their victim impact statements, he is sipping on water. He's looking around. He's kind of he's got his hands like folded on his chunky belly and he's just like eating it all up. And it's just the only thing that comes to mind is psychopathy. It's the only thing that comes to mind.
Narcissism. I think it's narcissism mixed with ignorance.
Yeah.
Which is so funny because narcissists would not like to be called ignorant.
So true. It's the irony. According to the National Institute of Health, psychopathy is defined as a neuropsychiatric disorder marked by deficient emotional responses, lack of empathy, and poor behavioral controls, commonly resulting in persistent antisocial deviance and criminal behavior. Although there is no official diagnosis of psychopathy recognized by psychologists or psychiatrists. So
that sounds just like him, though. Mm-hmm. It really does. But it's like, where the fuck did it come from? Like, where did it come from?
I guess
it had to have been the isolation.
Yeah.
But it was purposeful. Like, I don't think that his parents were like, you stay in your room. You know what I mean? Like, he did it himself.
I think he just, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe he did grow up feeling a little, like, distanced from everyone else.
Yeah, it's true.
Because his sisters were older, and I don't even want to call them his sisters. These young ladies, the daughters, were, because I just, fuck this guy. But the daughters were really, really close to them, and I think maybe he just kind of felt left out, and that's definitely not an excuse.
No, definitely not. It's maybe, almost like,
like, maybe he felt distanced from them anyways, so he was like, fuck it, I'm gonna lean into it, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like, right, like, the opposite of folly ado. It's, like, not shared psychosis, but it's, like, the opposite. Like, you're so isolated that you start to, like, make yourself, like, that's what it's crazy.
Like, reading those notebooks is, like,
it's, like, someone's, yeah, like, they're writing down every thought that pops in their head.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, I wonder if he's, like, a journaler. Like, if he was someone who liked to journal because he was so lonely. But it's, like, yeah, it's, like, let me write it down on paper and then, I don't know, because it's the only thing you can talk to, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Joel Michael Guy Jr. currently resides in a Northwest Correctional Complex in Tiptonville, Tennessee.
Tiptonville.
The end.
Dang, that was a really wild case. Yeah, it was definitely not what I was thinking at all.
It was a doozy.
Well, thanks for bringing that. We hope everyone's stomachs are okay.
I'm starving.
I'm pretty hungry, too. I think that since this episode is going to come out a day late, we're just going to go ahead and give it to you guys ad-free. Thank you for your patience, and thanks for joining us for another episode.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it.
Okay, we will see you guys next week.
Later.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye.